So in constructing, first in looking at participatory librarianship about how programs can incorporate a lot of input from the community and participation and not simply be a service on the side, and then looking at the Atlas, talking about how we define librarians as skills and individuals outside of the institutional context, the focus has been around people and librarians and what they can do with their communities. But as we look to expand within the Radical's Guide to really talking about what is the role, value, and of the institution of library, that means that we need to come up with a definition of them. And at this point, there are lots of definitions of libraries. If you look into any dictionary, encyclopedia, they tend to be, it's a place for books and materials and things that we loan out, not even taking into the role of curation or organization. There are some interesting work. I referenced the Darien sort of non-summit, library summit, where they came up with a statement on libraries, and which I think is generally good, but I have a problem in that it sort of says the library exists and we as human beings are here to serve it, and that just seems awfully Skynet-like to me. So I'm just wondering, the value of doing this is that as I've gone and looked at libraries, where they're trying to do as organizations with boards and finances and administrative schedules, and so as institutions, where they're doing making spaces and they're loaning seeds and they're loaning all this other stuff, one of the constant questions that comes up is, why is this a library? And so I guess the question I'm trying to turn around, which is, okay, is there a definition of library that can incorporate this sort of social participation sense? I'm just wondering what your thoughts might be on that.
I think one of the challenges with trying to define a library as being a building is in the fact that we have been trying to move as professionals towards more of an embedded model. So we're not expecting our community to come find us. We are trying to put ourselves directly inside our community and be part of that community so that we are able to more accurately and effectively anticipate their needs and to serve their knowledge creation needs. So if you are limited by some sort of physical structure, it's really, really hard to be embedded. So in lots of academic environments, for instance, it doesn't make any sense necessarily say, oh, the librarian is at the reference desk. You must go to this place in order to find that librarian. Isn't it better for the librarian to be almost moving around, trying to find out what is happening with the people who are using the collection, or whether that collection is physical or virtual, if it's online or on the shelf? How do we find a way to put ourselves at the point of need and to serve people in that way if we're constantly worried about where physically we are?
I'm wondering the question of, so Kim, for example, you are embedded in a research center at the University of Toronto. Do you need, one of the discussion is sort of agency, that the fact that you get some part of your value and the way people invite you in and see you is because you're part of the library. So you're sort of using that and bringing that in. I mean, is that something where you really do identify still as a relation to the library, or do you see yourself working more as an individual within the institution of this research center?
I guess I would say both, because the people that I work with know that I'm a liaison between that research team and the incredible collection that the University of Toronto has to offer. But I'm also the liaison who knows how to get to that collection more quickly than someone who perhaps hasn't had library training. And I have a contextual sense that gives me an advantage over a librarian who's not part of the research team. So the skill set is is sort of a combination where I am able to understand exactly what the research team needs in terms of their information context, and I know the collection, whether it's the physical collection or the online collection, whether it's text or data, where I can basically serve information needs very, very quickly because I have contextual knowledge of both environments.
Lane, I know you're doing a lot of work in information literacy instruction. I mean, you're actually
right
there in the pits, as it were, talking with all manner of students coming in and what they're doing. I'm wondering, you know, in your sense, instruction at the level of information literacy versus the classic bibliographic instruction, which is sort of how to use the library, that's a relatively new role for the institution of libraries to be moving into. Maybe I'm oversimplifying that. But I'm wondering, are you finding the folks that you work with sort of thinking that's an odd connection?
An odd connection between?
Library and instruction.
No, not at all. We have about a 40-year history of library instruction here. And I've only been here for five, but we sort of wear many hats, and that's the thing, is I hesitate to want to say that the library is one thing or the librarian is one thing. I do, and I know this is not the direction you want to take, the radical guide, but I do kind of place the library first. I do like the Darien statement quite a bit. So, but when I'm outside the library, that doesn't mean I have to, you know, tie everything back to the library. I can be a librarian and favor the library at the same time. So I am embedded in multiple classes. I teach as a faculty member for departments. I do about 60 to 70 one-shots every semester. So it's more about, for me, it's not about saying the librarian does this one thing or the library is this one place. It's about demonstrating to the campus community that we can do anything. And so,
But when you get into the anything, my question becomes, does it become so diffuse that – does it become too diffuse in that way?
No, I don't think so. I shouldn't say anything because there are certain issues, and I saw a blog post you wrote a few days ago about the concierge librarian and about, you know, helping students with the bursar and that sort of thing, and we don't do that. We do have a writing center in the building, so we send students there. The bursar is next door. We'll send them there. So we don't try to do absolutely everything. But anything that's related to an information need, whether it's personal, whether it's private, helping someone, you know, do a job application, helping them write a paper, whatever it is, that's what we're here for. And we try to make the library a destination. We definitely sell the library, and we are the most popular building on campus.
So the bounding for you of where the institution sort of mission is around this idea of an information need of the individual, the student, or what have you.
Yeah, it's that, and I feel that we should be able to answer and assist with any question a student has about the institution, about their classes, about research, just because we're the information people. But, yeah.
Wendy, you've done a huge amount of work in the area of advocacy and library advocacy, and I'm wondering, sort of put your hat on the other side of that, which is the people being advocated to. If you say, look, we really need support for the library and for tax or whatever it is, we are an organization that meets everyone's information need. Is that sufficient bounding for them?
I don't think, by and large, that most of our decision makers see the library, of course, the way librarians see it. They see it in highly traditional ways. For the most part, and I'm on the faculty at U of T, and I'm a former library administrator, Lane, but by and large, faculty seem to see the library as a purchasing agent and a collection builder and a developer of programs that both help students in one-on-one interactions and place tools and the like at the disposal of students. They tend not to mention teaching and other what I'd call upstream roles of academic librarians in when they think of librarians. And I that's partly because they don't give it a great deal of thought, so they default to their undergraduate days. But I mean, that mindset is strongly characteristic of academia, at senior levels of academia, administrators and senior faculty. In the public library environment, there is still a tendency to see the library in terms of a storehouse, and to see its lending far trumping its information roles. But I think that public libraries have some advantages in this perception business because of the growing challenge of inclusivity in society. And I think a much more general recognition now of libraries as a way for communities to thrive, to make diversity work in our big cities, to make the new mix work. In other words, I think they are much readier to notice and acknowledge the kind of non-custodial, non-kind of warehousing view.
I was going to say too. I should mention that the particular library that I'm at is quite unusual as academic libraries go. And I have worked in something much like you're describing, Wendy. But here, at least at UTC, we're moving to a $60 million building next week. They really support us. The administration puts the library front and center and puts library instruction front and center with information literacy written into our university mission, mm-hmm. and learning objectives for all of our general education classes. Really, for about the past 20 to 30 years, the library has been sort of near the top of the university. We're sort of the crown jewel of the university, and it's a very unusual position to be in.
Can I ask you a question, actually, of all of this, which is we're talking about how people can vet. I feel like, and this is the problem I keep coming back to, and the reason I'm asking for so much help, is because I feel like we're defining something by walking around its perimeter and not necessarily looking mm-hmm. into it, right? Because I'm wondering what prevents the library from becoming this. And Lauren, I'm going to come to you in a second. Mm-hmm. What prevents the library from being this bucket that we throw things into? In other words, one of the things I thought about is in public sphere, all the support offices for social services and taxation, they're all closing their help desk and they're leaving documents. And so don't worry, the public library will pick up the instructional role and do that. In academic libraries, information literacy, I think, is a mission born very much from within the academic library, and we've been selling it. But there's also the sort of default, well, can you also do this and can you also do that? And so the idea is that a library becomes what the community needs, which may be where we end today. We may simply say that's sufficient. But Lauren, the reason I want to come to you for a moment is with your experience in going out and talking to libraries about makerspaces and trying to say it's not just about having 3D printers in there. Mm-hmm. Number one question, I'm going to give you the number one question I get asked whenever I talk about libraries and communities, which is, okay, what makes this a library and not a community center? Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I'll start you off with the easy question.
Yeah. Well, I think because having a librarian there as a facilitator is part of the distinction. And I think librarians are uniquely positioned to be able to bring the right people into the mix to support the activities. But I certainly think there is a community center component to the library, and I think there should be. I don't know if I answered your question.
Well, so mediation to you is one of the key differentiators mm-hmm. here. It's not mm-hmm. just a space with things and missions, but it's a mediated space that is important.
I think so.
And there's a knowledge base that is critical to that role. A public library example from kind of pre-maker space discussion that I want to raise, that's a big piece of my own professional and institutional history, is preschool learning. There are many, many ways in which preschoolers can become ready to read. But across society, there is one public institution that systematically responds to the learning needs of the preschool child and that child's family, and that is the library. And where a library just kind of runs programs and so on inside the library, that library can affect the fate of a lot of kids in the community. Where that library sees its role, where those librarians see their role as being in the community, and they are facilitating the development of family literacy approaches in the daycare centers in their community, in the kind of church basements where, you know, preschoolers and moms have, you know, play dates and so on, the impact is infinitely greater. And their role is facilitation, sharing of knowledge, helping people to connect with ideas in one another that strengthen family literacy. And the research shows that when that happens outside the library as a building, the positive impacts are even greater. I mean, that research is now 10 years old. It's a really important piece. And I think that's one of the living, to me, one of the living examples of the distinction between getting the most kids through the library program and strengthening family literacy to the greatest extent within the community. Does that make any sense?
It does. Kim, actually, that comes, I think, back to a point you made, which is, you know, for those folks in your research center, you're the library.
Right. Yeah, and I think, and I mean, we do have books here. But of course, because they're academic researchers, they do have some idea about how to find said book on the shelf, although they do tend to come to me anyway. But I think that they know that, because it's such a small collection, I mean, it's only 8,000 volumes, and so likely, Kim can find it faster than if they were to search in our catalog for it. But I guess what I was listening to what Wendy was saying and to what Lane is saying, and I'm thinking, well, we started out talking about how defining a library, but we've come back to defining a librarian once again. And we've come back to this old question, is that how do we demonstrate our value? How do we define ourselves, and how do we define our value to other people who aren't in our space, who aren't in library land, who aren't part of our community and this sort of funny culture that we are, and having the best jobs in the world. So then it comes down to, well, if I sat in a room where the books were and didn't interact with my research team, then they would find all kinds of other ways to find the information that they needed, probably Google. They probably, you know, would just use the easiest online tool there is, and that's Google. So by embedding myself with the research team, then they know that they'll get a much higher quality, more contextually accurate answer by asking me for some assistance. But I also, it's also my responsibility to make sure that they understand what I can do for them. So I need to be able to anticipate those needs. I can't just sit and wait for people to come to me. I have to try to anticipate needs, build systems, and build processes in order to make the research process more efficient so that the researchers can spend more time doing what they do well, as opposed to like messing around with citation management, for instance. And I think that when you start thinking about the whole idea of what's the difference between a library and a community center, is that in a community center, you don't have the same dedication to service. You don't have the same dedication to identifying individual needs, the contextual needs of that person, and what can be done for them. I just in a community center, wouldn't it be wonderful if that were the case? But I just don't think that it's there, and I think that that's a difference.
So, Lane, help me out here, because I keep coming back to the definition of a library is librarian plus community. And your comment about, you know, the Darianne statement starts with the idea that there's a persistence to this concept.
Right. we'll help you out. How?
Your point about, you know, when I look at that statement and it says something like, in essence, there's a library. It does. Its purpose is all of these things. It does all of these things, and then it has these stewards called librarians.
Right. And I actually prefer the term delegates to stewards. I think that librarians are delegates to a community. We are sort of unofficially appointed to be stewards of the library. But you know, I think back to when I was an undergraduate, and I didn't talk to a librarian. I don't think I talked to a librarian at all, ever, once. I was a heavy library user, though. Librarians were definitely there in the background, making sure systems were running appropriately. But I was able to use the physical space and excel in my studies and learn and do everything I needed to do. And the librarian was not, like, up front in that process. And I think there are a lot of people like that. And I see a lot of students that are autodidacts, I guess, for lack of a better term. And I hesitate to say that the library must be the librarian plus community thing, because I worry about those who can use the space themselves, prefer to learn on their own, prefer to take things at their own pace, and don't want or need someone interfering feel as interference.
Would you still agree that that's a mediated space in the sense that it wasn't just an open room? Someone went in there and, you know, created, enabled you to do that.
Absolutely. Still a mediated space. And I like that. I like that expression that a library is a mediated space. I wrote that one down. I'm going to keep it.
Well, and the other thing you bring up, which I think is really, when you bring up that term delegate, which is a really cool concept, is that there is some sort of community mandate, agreement, compact, in essence, that a recognition and mission that the community is saying, we are giving you, in essence, power to be a library.
And right.
That might be broken up into different services and such, but it's recognition that you have a special role.
Yeah, but it's a role that exists in relationship to the library itself, that place that preserves the integrity of civilization, or what Osborne calls the social transcript. We preserve that. And I mean, I think about some of what you've been saying, and I think of, like, I was thinking about this last night about, I think the view you kind of advocate in the Atlas, it looks at librarians analogous with a hospital. And what I mean by that is you can take the doctor out of the hospital and the doctor can still heal. You know, in fact, it's not the medicine and the bandages. It's the expertise of the doctors, you know, and the staff and the nurses and everything. And I think I would take more of a, we're more like a legislature. I don't know, more of a political entity. I don't want to say political entity. It might be loaded. But I don't know if I'm behind that idea that it's the librarian that makes the library. I do think that the library exists before the librarian. And that's part of that thing about that the Darien statement talks about preserving over time. I mean, this library that I'm at has been here for 150 years before me and will be here for 150 years after me.
If you don't screw it up.
If I don't screw it up, exactly. But, you know, somehow it's kept on going.
Right.
You know.
Well, and I think the other thing that you brought up, and I'll just throw this out to anyone who wants to take it, which is we keep talking about space and place. And one of the things that I've been thinking about and I'm hearing a lot of is, you know, they can be virtual places and spaces. They can be, you know, et cetera. But that one of the concepts that comes around with it is the ability to collaborate, explore. I'm not quite sure what it is. In other sense, a database sitting there on the web doesn't a library make. There's got to be something, and it's not the fact that a librarian put it there. That's still not quite enough. And I don't know what the magic sauce is. I guess that's the struggle that I'm having here. It doesn't turn into a question. Sorry.
So maybe it's about facilitation. Maybe it's about being a guide. I like the idea of a mediated space. I like the idea of a delegate, because the delegate is helping to shepherd along a process. So we don't own somebody else's knowledge creation process. We are there to facilitate and to perhaps enhance it, to make it a better quality journey.
So if the example I have, because I love picking on my mother, because, you know, I don't have a therapist, so I use you guys. She lives in Glendale, Ohio, which is this nice affluent suburb north of Cincinnati. And they all decided that they used to have a library back in the day, and it's time to have another one. They had a community center. They opened it up. They asked for all the borrowed and used books that the community no longer wanted, took them, put them into the space, and said, open up. We're here. Come to us. First week, lots of people. Second week, no one showed up because they had read all the books. But what I guess my question about that is, one, it's a place people can come and collaborate on it. It's a mediated space. They didn't just throw the books in the middle of it. And if you want to take the sort of official doctoral definition, it had a librarian who was retired who helped organize it. But it also had the fact that the community said, that's our library. So, you know, once again, I'm hearing the idea that, you know, it's a place of collaboration, it's a mediated space that it has, you know, sort of this authority vested in it by the community. Once again, academic libraries have vested. And Lane, I guess my point is, I probably take this too far when you mentioned the idea that library existed before you and afterwards. And I wasn't completely joking about the idea that if you don't screw it up and it's not you personally, but in essence, it takes a continued effort of people to make that institution function. Someone has to agree that it continues.
Right.
So there's a history, and you get power, right? You get to show up because that's people know, you know, UTC, that's got a great library. That even before I meet you, you already have some understanding of you as a character, right? U of Toronto, you know, if you're in Canada and you're associated with U of T, you know, you already get a benefit of a doubt that many others may not. So there's this investment that came from the people within it doing a good job, being recognized by the people out of it. So there's a dynamic of sort of community investment and internal investment. To me, that's ultimately a human process. I may take it to an extreme, but
I think the key word is investment, and that different members of the community need to invest and continue to invest in order to be able to receive the value of it. So, for instance, I was speaking to somebody last week who is trying to build a library on the Six Nation Reserve, which is a native reserve that's not too far from where Wendy now lives and where I grew up. And this is a very, very important native reserve in Canada. It's very, very large. It's historically significant. And in terms of economics, it is a mess. It is an embarrassment as a non-native Canadian that we have let this happen to this community. They're trying to build a library. They have managed to get all kinds of buy-in from different areas of the community, whether it's someone who's donated an old house that the library is going to live in. There's contractors who are willing to put the work into it to fix it up, to get rid of the mold, to make it a space that is appropriate for people to be inside. And the last piece is they didn't get the funding from the federal government this cycle, which means that they now have to wait for another almost 12 months of cycle to get a shovel in the ground. And in the meantime, because it's now been delayed, they are at risk of losing all the other financial and community commitments that have been made. So it's an example of everybody was ready to invest, and then as soon as you stop investing, whether it's emotionally or financially, we've lost it. It's lost. So if your mom's community doesn't continue to invest in that space, they're not going to reap the benefits. And that's why buy-in and investment from the community who wants to receive benefit from that library, that's why it's so important. You know, here at the University of Toronto, I actually I bug our chief librarian quite a bit because we have this fantastic collection. We're the third largest academic university, academic collection in North America, the biggest in Canada by far. And I'm always like, yeah, collection. But what about the human beings that are inside that actually make this whole business work? But at the end of the day, people recognize that an investment has been made by the province of Ontario, by the people who attend the University of Toronto, by the people who look after the budgets of the University of Toronto Libraries, that this place called the library, all 44 pieces of it across campuses, is worth the investment. And that's why we get value from it.
Also, just another comment about the U of T library system, which is, you know, it's one of the jewels of the U of T crown. It ranks very high, and, you know, universities care about rankings. And the key to the significance of U of T libraries in the ranking has been the collection. But over, and to Lane's earlier point, over at our Mississauga campus, where, 3 or 4 years ago, we opened the McCallion Academic Learning Center, that is now a huge people attractor, this mediated space that has a lot of different things going on. And at the same time, and this is Marianne Mavernack's leadership of that, she's now at the University of Rochester, Dave, not far from you, but there's been a lot of upstream movement of the librarians into more of the academic processes of the university, research and teaching. In other words, they are not just designers and custodians and operators of the building, significant though that is, and their success has been such that the university, particularly the people at the Mississauga campus, are trying to understand what's going on at the new library, because they want, they're trying to figure out what they can learn about that success that they can apply in other academic processes in buildings and so on. So it's not independent of space, but what is happening over there is, it just seems to me, shows the significance of rather more, I'm not crazy about the word embedded, but I mean, it's a good shorthand, in making greater headway, having greater impact, helping to define research questions. One of my war stories, Lane, in academic librarianship, comes out of my session that I attended at ALA in Las Vegas about libraries and librarians in MOOCs. And both Dave and I are veterans, he much more than I, of having designed and offered MOOCs in library science. It was crushing to hear that most of the people who were at that session saw or had defined themselves into or had allowed themselves to be defined into MOOC roles of, you know, checking copyright clearances instead of looking at things like instructional design, which is something that professionally we know a great deal about. Otherwise, we couldn't possibly be effective in the bibliographic instruction business or the information literacy business, but instead to kind of relegate ourselves to the, the tidying up of certain kinds of fairly mechanical details. It is that kind of expansion of librarian roles at UTM that I think is the counterpart to designing different kinds of spaces. It's all, it's just a very different version of academic librarianship from the one to which I was exposed as an undergraduate and the one into which I graduated way, 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 way back when. I was a baby academic librarian. Those are my origins as a librarian.
So what I'm hearing, and I'll throw this one out again, but I'm just trying to synthesize a bit, is that we're talking about mediated spaces, once again, virtual, physical, whatnot, and where librarians as delegates are the ones helping, are doing the mediating, facilitating, whether it's in direct access or preparing in a ready environment, et cetera, that there's a continued investment by a community, and that part of that investment is the investment of authority of some sort, through a charter, through what have you. And then, so my other question, though, is, so far, I don't know I'll get nods on all that, but those are kinds of where I'm hearing coming from. The other one is that this instructional mission keeps coming up. In other words, a mediated space owned by the community around the concept of instruction and learning. I mean, because then the minute we say that, and you're going to get the people saying, "Whoa, what about leisure time reading? And what about all these other things?" To which I give this nice generic answer that that's all learning, though I think that doesn't have the fidelity that many people would like, and that's a fair comment. So is learning in that space, is that, you know, Lane, I'm going back to your comment where you said meeting the information needs.
Yeah.
Is that the same thing as learning needs?
And you know that I don't think that reading reading Harry Potter is about learning. I think that there's I study a lot of aesthetics, and so I do think there's an aesthetic kind of phenomenological experience that is not captured by learning. I'm in an academic library, so yes, our focus is on learning. We do have some graphic novels and some videos, and we do have quite an extensive fiction selection, but I think this is more a question for public libraries where, you know, a public library would be better at answering that.
Okay, so, but in general, so you would make, and I know we this is a great conversation to have, and we're going to have a conversation about the role of fiction, for example, and et cetera. That's one of the questions we're also going to have as part of this series. But my problem with the notion of saying that these are all centered around the idea of an information need is that also is really broad, right? I mean, because what is an information need?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Depending on how you define it. Okay. All right. So this helps me because I think, you know, what's nice about it is I feel like we've moved from dancing around the edges of this to actually going into that and saying, because once again, what I'm hearing is, for example, Kim, you're bringing that, you know, portions of that space and liaising to that space, both the virtual aspects, but also connected to any physical aspects if they exist, which of course clearly they do in U of T. And so you're extending, in essence, that space to where you are. And I can still see the fact that you can have librarians that don't work in this notion of a mediated, you know, continuous investment authority space, that in essence their work is not part of a larger institution or a larger social mission that has durability or duration beyond the interchange. When I say this, even I roll my eyes at the academic sounding nature of that, but
Well, I'm interested. So, you know, there's lots of roles that happen at Robarts, our big research library, that do not involve student interaction, but still contribute to the performance and the role and the responsibilities of that library. So I'm thinking, for instance, of our information technology and services team, which makes sure that the catalog interface that somehow Summon becomes usable. So how do we create a web interface around these federated search tools that we use? And we have so many of them. And they are all different. How do we try to improve the user experience for the students and the researchers and the faculty members? So that team is a team of it's a hybrid team. I mean, there are librarians on that team. There are programmers on that team. There are user interface design specialists on that team. And they're all working towards the same goal. So they're not necessarily facing the I hate using the word end user, but, you know, they're not facing the members of our community directly, but what they're doing still touches them.
Right. And
so
the space is mediated, includes the idea that the custodians come in and the facilities people make sure that it's comfortable in terms of it's heated or it's cooled in summer and such. And so there's a whole team that
it's almost
takes
like,
care
like
of.
I keep thinking like it's this other home. Right? Mm-hmm. I mean, this time of year, the students are treating our libraries like their second homes. They're there an awful lot. We're up to 24/7, you know, library open hours right now because it's exam season. And I mean, yesterday we had a power glitch in Robarts, and the lights flickered, and the elevators went wonky, and suddenly there was no water. And it was, I mean, the impact that it had on, you know, the perception of well-being on the students that were working in that space was huge. It was a big mess. So it's just, there's so much more going on than just the collection. It's this, you know, it's like we have work and we have home, and then this third place. And I think that the whole idea of how libraries are perceived in terms of how that space is useful is changing a lot too. At the University of Toronto, we have moved so many of our physical books to our storage facility and opened up that space for human use. So all kinds of different collaborative or quiet study spaces, and it's all based on demand from our community. So it's, I mean, space is important that way.
And so the community is also mediating that space, as it were.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
All right. So this has been extremely useful to me, and I don't want to cut off anyone who's been dying to throw point X in. So,
well, I have a point.
There we go.
And I think if the goal here is to define library, you're going to want to be very, very careful, because there are two distinct senses of library that we've been talking about. We've been talking about the concrete physical space itself, mm-hmm. But we've also been talking about the abstract notion of library. And you're going to want to be careful, because getting those mixed up is, well, it's equivocating. It's mixing them up. I mean, our library, we have the writing centers in the library, the classroom technology, student advisors are in the library. I mean, all these things are co-located in the library building, but they're not part of the library, if that makes sense. And so the library can be a subsection of a library.
Got it.
You know, there's two different ways where you're using the term.
That's very good. Yes. Right? Because you're going to the library may mean you're going to the physical library, but it may mean that you're getting the benefit of this space and all the mediation and delegation that's going with it. Those are two different things.
Yeah, I mean, even if you look, and you mentioned the Chattanooga Public Library,
yeah.
And I'm well familiar with the space, and what they call fourth floor, their maker space, digital startup collaboration place, is almost not, it's really not considered the library. Hmm. Maybe the director, Nate Hill, you know, he's a librarian, but to the community, it's not the library. Hmm. It's the business incubator, the digital tech place, the hacker space. It's not the library. You go to the second floor where my friend Justin runs the teen center and the children's, that's the library. You know, and so even though the whole building's called a library, even some spaces within it run by librarians are not considered the library by the community.
Interesting. Hmm. Very good. Well, thank you all very, very much. My goal is – sorry, Wendy.
Could I just say that in Edmonton – and I'm making an advocacy point here. That is very much perceived as the library.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
That whole combination, and I mean, they have 21 community librarians whose job it is not to be in their office, and they actually audit their time. They two or three times a year, they put their feet to the fire, and every half hour they ask them, okay, what am I doing now? And they do analyses of where their time goes. And there's a very strong perception in the community of Edmonton, especially among their funders, that that whole thing is about what librarians do and the power and impact of the library in their community. And Edmonton is one of our, in many ways, one of our tougher cities. There's a large off-reserve Aboriginal population in Edmonton, a lot of street people in Edmonton, and there are also extremes of affluence in Edmonton. And Edmonton Public Library has kind of reframed urban librarianship in many ways, but it's very clear in their community, on the part of their community media, on the part of their city council, that what those librarians do inside and outside buildings is an integrated piece. It's very interesting in perception and advocacy terms.
And it comes back to this sort of socially constructed mandate and a socially constructed concept of what spaces, where the spaces, et cetera. So, all right, folks, this has been extremely helpful to me. So, thank you for your time.